Obscured in the last 3 years of Illinois' budget struggles is a remaining massive unfunded liability in the state pension systems. Larry Alfrink is president of the State University's Annuitants Association, which has 1,600 members. He taught at Illinois State University for decades. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with Alfrink about the state pension problem debate, including what Governor Bruce Rauner suggested in his budget speech, getting universities and school districts to pay future pension costs. Alfrink says the pension cost shift proposal was a great idea 4 or 5 years ago, before cuts to higher education.
At that time, this was actually a proposal that came out of the Institute for Government Policy and Affairs at the University of Illinois. And all the 12 public universities signed off on it at that time with the stipulation that the state had to continue the funding of the university, at least at the current levels. And at that point, they would shift 0.5% of the pension costs for their of their payroll to would cover 0.5% of the payroll each of those years over a 12 to, I think, 14-year period. The community colleges also signed off on that. It died when the public schools would not, because they were concerned about whether it would require them to raise property taxes.
Are there constitutional questions about it?
There are no constitutional questions about that issue. It's more a pragmatic issue. And particularly in the governor's proposal, where this happens over 4 years rather than over 12, if you do it over 12 years, 0.5% is something that most school districts and universities and community colleges probably could absorb over time. But if you're doing it over 4 years, that's a huge chunk of money, and they can't absorb that. And so for the public schools, that would mean that they would have to seek property tax increases, which the governor opposes. That would basically just increase taxes, but through property taxes rather than through an income tax.
It's a
tax shift.
Would it be absorbable if funding levels were still at 3 years ago levels?
Well, at the time the proposal was out there originally, that 0.5% would have been absorbable. But over 4 years, no, it would not have been absorbable.
Even then.
And for the universities, you know, the university's tuition is already pretty high. And so the question is, how would they be able to absorb it? And the answer would be they'd have to either they'd either have to raise tuition further, making us less competitive with the surrounding states, or they'd have to eliminate programs, or they'd have to reduce faculty and staff, or there'd be no pay raises, and a whole series of WGLT probably wouldn't exist.
Gee, thanks. Thanks for that. Full disclosure, we are state employees here at the station, and our license is owned by Illinois State University. How is the Annuitants Association continuing to try to further the conversation on the pension issue? You can reduce pension benefits for future employees, but you can't impair benefits for current employees, according to the state Supreme Court, which leaves us where in dealing with the pension liability that lawmakers and governors for a long, long time have underfunded?
Well, it was underfunded underfunded in 1970 when the constitutional provision was put in by individuals from the University of Illinois who insisted on it for the state constitution at that convention. And they put in Article 13, Section 5, which says that you cannot impair or diminish the pensions. Governor Edgar realized that the pension debt, which at that time the university pension system, SURS, S-U-R-S, was funded at about 40% of obligations, roughly where it is now, oddly enough, and decided he needed a plan to help get rid of the pension debt. There are actually two problems, one of which is well known. He underfunded the early years in the bill that passed in 1994. So rather than pay the normal costs that year and pay part of the pension debt, he didn't even pay the normal costs. And so the pension debt continued to grow for a period of time. Then when he went into a period in which that was no longer the case, they supposedly were no longer underfunding the pension debt, but they devised it so that the cost to the state grew as a percentage of salary. So as payroll went up, so did the debt. And it is growing to a point that many people believe is unsustainable, and I can't really disagree with that.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Larry Alferink, the head of the Annuitants Association for University Workers in the state of Illinois. You used a term of art there called the normal debt. That was something that Governor Rauner also used in proposing the shift of normal pension costs to individual schools and universities. That is something less than the full pension cost, correct?
The normal cost is the full pension cost, but it doesn't include the payment to reduce the debt. So the normal cost is what is incurred
each year.
So it's the annual cost of the pension system to the state.
So that still leaves the state bearing the responsibility for years and decades of underfunding.
Correct. And if we do nothing, the pension debt will grow to the annual cost required to pay it off would be $18 billion a year. We're currently at about $8 billion a year. So by 2045, which was the last year of the Edgar ramp-up period, that's where the $18 billion would come in. And that's caused by using a percent of payroll. If you keep trying to do things that would attempt to diminish pensions, and the governor proposed a proposal that would do that, those proposals will be tied up in court and conceivably will be found unconstitutional again, and you will have lost a couple of years and will have made no progress. So the State University's Annuitants Association decided to take a different type of approach to solving the pension issue.
And you have a bill.
We have a bill. The bill is House Bill 7341. The chief sponsor of the bill is Robert Martwick, who's a Democrat who chairs the House Pension Committee. There's also a Republican sponsor on the bill who supports this as well. And this bill, which has been through a subject matter hearing in the House, would change the way in which we pay for the debt. We hired an actuarial science faculty member from the University of Illinois to do the mathematics of how this proposal would work. And we went through four iterations. The last one was suggested by Robert Markwick, which provides a flat payment between now and 2045 and sets it up in such a way that the pension debt gets eliminated. And it does that by selling a series of bonds that mature each 5 years until we get to 2045. And the proceeds of those bond sales are transmitted to the five pension systems.
How does this work, though? Because in selling bonds, you're incurring interest. Aren't you increasing the interest costs for taxpayers in general?
That's a good question. The answer to that is that one of the problems when the state underfunded the pension systems is the pension systems didn't have the money to invest, and that good pension systems require three things. It's three legs of a stool. One is the cost that occur to the employee. So the employees for universities pitch in 8% of their salaries. Part of it is the contributions made by the state, which currently for CSRS is around 9% per year, less than 3% over the cost of Social Security if they had Social Security, which university employees do not have. And the third is the earnings on those two contributions. And so if you only have the system funded at 40%, you're missing a huge chunk of earnings.
Are you making up the payments enough, though, to not only get the earnings to fund the pension, but to pay the interest on the bonds?
The actuary has set this up with a fund that is set aside that cannot be touched, where the earnings of that go to pay the interest on the bond sale. The bonds are expected to cost the state about 5.5%. And the earnings historically over CSRS are actually over 7.5%, but he estimated about 7%. So
is that a reliable gauge, though? Because earnings vary over time depending on the investment instruments and the marketplace. Right now, we're at near a peak high, and we've seen a correction. Can we assume that things are going to go forward in a more or less linear fashion?
No, we don't assume that it's a linear fashion. We just assume that the average over time is a certain amount. And so the 7.62% that CERS has earned has been over a 10-year period.
You're saying that 10-year period, though, has been during a run-up in the market. Can we assume that that is the historically accurate way to view it?
There have been down years during that period, and there have been up years during that period. And so last year, CERS earned 12% on their earnings because, as you said, the market is up. The year before that, it was 0.2%. So you do have down years and you do have up years, but averaging out over time, you are likely to do. The state did a bond issue that was much smaller years ago, and they made money on that bond issue. It does depend on arbitrage. In other words, the difference between the cost of the bond and the earnings on the proceeds of the bond over time.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking pension debt and the way to solve it with Larry Alfrink of the Annuitants Association. Now, this sounds similar to a proposal from the Blagojevich administration, which went nowhere, partly because neither Democrats nor Republicans in the legislature trusted Rod Blagojevich as governor. How is this different, where Governor Rauner is likewise also viewed as not an entirely reliable negotiating partner by both sides?
Well, the problem in the Blagojevich thing is it actually did sell the bonds that are due to mature in 2020. And so that bond debt will disappear in a couple of years. Problem is the state kept the money rather than turning the money over to the pension systems, and therefore it earned no money during that period. It just helped cover other state payments that needed to be made. The key here is you have to give the money so the pension systems are funded at least 90%, which was the target that the Edgar administration tried to reach.
What is to prevent future General Assemblies from doing a politically expedient fashion, as happened during the Blagojevich administration, as happened over the last 30, 40 years, where the pension payments have not been made?
Understand that the debt here would be held by the bond agencies, and not paying the bond agencies would be a huge mistake for the state. It is true that conceivably they could rob the pension system, but that they haven't done that since 1970, and that would be actually real unlikely. But yes, there's always a risk that the legislature will do something that doesn't make sense.
Which leads us to politics. Is this a politically saleable idea in this an election year?
Well, it's always going to be a different, difficult sell because the bond sale is $107 billion, but the savings are $103 billion between now and 2045. That savings of $103 billion does get the attention of lots of people. Will it pass this year? I don't know. Will it need modification? I don't know that either, but we're willing to make modification. We're not wedded to our specific proposal that's in Bill 7341 currently, and we're perfectly open to modifying this if better ideas come up or if questions come up. But we thought we needed to start having a conversation on how to solve this problem in a way that's constitutional and that is a different way of looking at the problem.
It's early going. Next steps.
The House Pension Committee will have another subject matter hearing, bringing in financial experts to talk about the feasibility of the plan in terms of the sale of the bonds, because this would be the largest bond sale that's ever been done.
Yeah, you talked about the savings getting people's attention, but $107 billion in borrowing, that may cause some consternation and anxiety, too.
Well, understand that the state has already borrowed $129 billion, because that's the current cost of the debt of the pension systems. So this is not increasing the debt of the state, it's just changing it in a different way. You have to look at this as buying a house and having a mortgage at 12%, which is what it was when I moved to Bloomington Normal, and then refinancing that debt at a lower cost of interest. And that's really what you're doing. You're saving a lot of money if you refinance, even though there's some cost associated with the refinancing. If you can refinance it and save money over time, that's a good idea. And we're essentially trying to refinance the debt in a different way that will save the state money.
The governor made several other proposals in his budget address. What are their chances?
One of those was a proposal that was originally put forward by Eric Medear, who was John Cullerton's attorney, the president of the Illinois Senate. And that proposal relies on provisions of contracts because contracts could always be renegotiated. And the pension clause includes the contract phase, and Medea relied on that language. And the contract is you can exchange something in consideration for something else. And so that proposal would require university employees to make a choice between retaining their current 3% annual cost of living increase, or COLA, or alternatively, giving up some of that COLA so that it's no more, cannot exceed 3%, but would be half of the CPI, the Consumer Price Index.
And what is the consideration for that give?
That if you do that, you'll be able to get all future pay raises counted toward your pension. If you do not do that, you will not be allowed to get future pay raises. Our attorney believes that will be found unconstitutional. The argument that Medea made is that there's no constitutional protection that you will receive future pay raises. Unfortunately, there's some flaws in that assumption because there are lots of circumstances that would require people's pay to increase. For example, if you are an employee working for the state earning minimum wage, if the state increases what the minimum wage is, all individuals who are below the minimum wage would have to have their pay raised to at least equal the minimum wage. If you have an employee who's a civil service employee, if they take a different position at a different civil service pay grade, under the civil service system, they would be required to be paid no less than the minimum at that pay grade. That's just two examples, and he has a whole list of many others. We believe that that proposal would be found unconstitutional. You'd again be tied up in court. You know, maybe the court would fine for the state, but if it doesn't, you haven't done anything to solve the pension debt issue, and you just move the problem a couple years down the road.
Should it be a both and? You know, go ahead, do this, and then test it in court and do the borrowing?
That's up to the legislature. So they could make both of those decisions, and that would be fine. The other proposal that the governor made was to reduce the cost of health care for the state. Unfortunately, that is not a simple matter because after a second Supreme Court decision that was a 7-1 decision called the Kenerva case, the Supreme Court found that health care costs for state employees are also covered by Article 13, Section 5, and that limits what can be done. That particular case dealt with retirees who, as part of their employment contract after retirement, do not pay for health insurance premiums.
That also constitutes an impairment.
That also constitutes an impairment based on the Supreme Court decision. And so if the governor seeks to reduce benefits, that would be an impairment as well. So that if my costs go up, since I'm retired, that would be an impairment of my pension income in the other direction. And the state could do that constitutionally, but they can only do it within the limits of a proportional increase of the cost of the state. So if the governor is seeking to make a fairly drastic decrease, he probably would end up in a court case. If he does it so it's modest and proportional to what the cost of the state is, that would be constitutional based on our lawyer's opinion. That can be negotiated away. Since the Edgar administration, pretty much all state employees got whatever was negotiated by AFSCME. And if you negotiate a contract, that's constitutional. But at least in our case, SUA took a position a year ago last May that said we would not be part of future discussions and have separated ourselves from any agreements of that sort, such that we would be covered only by the constitutional protection of Article 13, Section 5. So there's a lot of things that will happen. Probably the choice bill will not pass. It was part of the grand bargain that was proposed last year, and that part of the grand bargain fell apart, and it did not pass. It's not expected to pass this year either.
Why not? If it was once part of it, why can't it be retained as part of a new effort?
Because there's nothing to offset the grand bargain had 13 proposals in it that appealed to different parts of the legislature, and it was set up in such a way such that if everything had to pass or nothing passes. Mm-hmm. So you had to do all 13 proposals. And so that was a compromise that gave some people some things and gave other people some things and that balanced off the opposition to the support and was expected to maybe pass. It didn't. And so it fell apart. If you have this by itself, you don't have the support to pass this by itself politically. The health care probably will not pass either. It's probably not much support in the legislature for that, from what we can tell so far. We never know over time. And the cost shifting, there's already been a bill filed by a Republican member who's supporting Jeannie Ives in the Republican primary to prevent that from ever happening. There's clearly going to be opposition to that as well. It right now, given how drastic of an increase it would be to the cost of the school districts, it would be very unlikely that the legislators would support that bill and have it pass.
Larry Alfrink is the president of the State Universities Annuitants Association. He spoke with GLT's Charlie Schlenker for Sound Ideas.